I'm KCII News Director Sally Hart, and on this Friday edition of the KCII Agriculture Magazine, I'm speaking with State Senator Kevin Kinney about industrial hemp legislation and being safe as farm machinery gets back on the roadway this spring. There has been some legislation introduced in Iowa regarding industrial hemp. Can you explain what that legislation is and where it is in the process?
There are two versions of the bill right now, the Senate's version and the House versions. Both of them would allow for hemp to be grown in Iowa. What has happened is in the farm bill, the Department of Ag has allowed states to come in and grow hemp as a commodity, and it has allowed states to either use the USDA rules or rules that are the state legislatures come up with and would work with the Department of Ag or IDALS in implementing those rules. There is some differences in the two bills. Much of them is the same. I guess the biggest difference is that in the House version, hemp production would be overseen by the Department of Ag with the required assistance from the Department of Public Safety. The Senate bill is IDALS, or the Department of Ag would be in charge of the rulemaking and the overseeing of the industrial hemp bill. I think that in the end, I think it's going to have a good impact in Iowa, either bill, it will allow another crop to be grown and bring in industry into Iowa. And hopefully we can get some infrastructure set up where we can be producing the hemp here in Iowa. I've talked to people from Canada that are looking for hemp seed for food, and both coasts looking to do other things with hemp, everything from lip balm to makeup to ply board to insulation. Hemp can be used in, I believe there's 25,000 different products that hemp is in now, and I think that there's an upside. I had a good conversation with a person that was looking for plastics. Hemp is biodegradable after so long, where plastics here, you know, they're in our landfills and will sit there forever, where a hemp product will eventually break down.
And have both of these bills, the Senate and the House bill, been passed through committee?
I know that the Senate bill is through committee, and I'm almost certain that the House bill is also through committee.
And on the Senate side, since that's where you serve, do you anticipate it being taken up for floor debate?
I look for it to be taken up for floor debate here in the next few weeks. Within the next 2 weeks, I think it'll be out.
And hemp as a crop, does Iowa's climate fare well for hemp production?
I've talked to a number of different agronomists and so forth, and hemp does work well here in Iowa. Actually, you can double crop a hemp crop here in Iowa, and the second crop, the one usually grown in, planted the 1st of August and harvested in October, is a better quality than the earlier crop in the summer just because of the weather conditions. But both are suited very well for here for Iowa.
And would there be any restrictions as far as how many acres of a farmer could then have an industrial hemp planted?
Yes, we looked, and there's a 40-acre limit on a license you have to license it or and get a permit to grow. And the most one individual can do is 40 acres.
And what would the licensing process be?
Well, you would apply to IDLS, Iowa Department of Land Stewardship.
And would there be a certain fee associated with that?
There is. There's a sliding fee. I believe it's $1,000 if you had the full 40 acres, and then if you have smaller amounts, it is reduced.
And what do you anticipate to see if this is passed as far as Iowa's farmers? Do you expect them to, you know, get that in the ground the first season that it's allowed?
I do. I've been getting a lot of questions, a lot of emails from farmers from within our area and from other parts of the state. So I think it's something that there's a number of farmers that are looking at this, especially with the cost of production in corn and soybeans right now.
And you said, you know, it has a later plant as an option in the season. One thing that comes to my mind is those producers, if we get horrible flooding or drought early in the season, you would still have the option to then plant this instead.
Yeah, this would be an option.
And again, with the industrial hemp, why do you feel it's important for Iowa's farmers to have this as an option as they look at, you know, diversifying their products?
Other states around us are doing the same thing. There are a lot of groups that are looking towards Iowa because of our fertility here, of our soils, and the way that Iowa has put or has brought in the ethanol industry and how they have formed co-ops to get production facilities, and they feel that they know how, and that the farmers have already done this with the ethanol industry, that the know-how is here and the will is here to do that.
And if any listeners want to oppose or applaud the bill so that it gets traction or doesn't, what should they do?
They should contact your local state legislators. I just hope everyone has a good ag week here. And it's just been interesting up here in Des Moines this year, especially with a lot of the agriculture issues that we're dealing with. So this one being the biggest.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you'd like to say to folks as some of those ag implements and machinery gets back on the roadways?
Just be safe. These implements are wide, they're big, and they're going a lot slower than what people realize. And I myself have come upon many accidents where someone has been rear-ended, and it's just they didn't realize how fast that the tractors were going, and they misjudged and struck the rear of the vehicles, and just be safe out there.
That's been State Senator Kevin Kenney talking about industrial hemp legislation and sharing a safety message from his law enforcement background. I'm KCII News Director Sally Hart with this edition of the KCII Agriculture Magazine.
I'm Brandon Shanahan with KCII News. On this segment of the Agriculture Magazine, I'm speaking with the bee lady, Carly Ray, to talk about bees. So first question I have is just how long have you been around beekeeping?
Yeah, so I've been keeping bees since I was 15 years old. The summer before, I went to the state fair and went past the Iowa Honey Producers booth where they have the observation hives and whatnot in the upstairs of the ag building, and they were handing out information about the youth scholarship program. So I applied for that, received that, and then I've been keeping bees ever since. No more than, let's see, 5 hives at a time, so definitely hobbyist level.
And then what made you want to get involved in that, or kind of what sparked when you started being around bees?
Yeah, the interest actually started probably around third grade. My family went on a field trip to visit Phil Ebert's honey farm, and we were in his honey building, and I just got hooked on the idea of producing my own honey. I just thought that'd be the coolest thing ever. So much that I actually asked for beekeeping books for Christmas, and my parents got me the books. I was reading through and realized, oh my goodness, this is complicated. And overall, like, an even bigger feeling, oh my goodness, this is really expensive. I can't do this. So it kind of became what I thought was going to be a pipe dream at that point until I heard about the scholarship several years later.
You also mentioned that you spent time as the honey queen. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what that is?
Yeah, so one of the requirements in the scholarship program is that you attend a beekeeping class, and I attended it through the Friendly Beekeepers of Iowa and Indianola. And I continued to be involved with them, and they actually surprised me one evening at one of our club meetings with a crown and a sash, and they said, hey, you're our Friendly Beekeepers of Iowa Honey Queen. And so that was a really new role for me. I got to really explore what that meant in my own way. It ended up meaning about 55 presentations that year, just going around to different schools and nursing homes, different groups and interests in the Des Moines area. And then the next year that blossomed into my interest of running for Iowa Honey Queen through the Iowa Honey Producers Association. And I ended up winning that title. And that year I visited all 99 counties, gave over 500 presentations, and really learned a lot more about beekeeping in Iowa and was able to share about the industry with a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have heard about it.
When you were traveling around the state, what kind of things did you learn that maybe you didn't think of when you first got involved in beekeeping, or just kind of what was your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, so one of the biggest takeaways was getting a new perspective on beekeeping at a bigger scale, since I'd been involved at the hobbyist level for so long. I got to meet beekeepers who had one hive to beekeepers who had thousands, and to see how that really was such a different experience for them, where they have pollination industry that they're a part of, that they're traveling the United States pollinating these different crops throughout the year, and also trying to manage honey production where it's a full-time job. There's no vacation from being a beekeeper once you're at the commercial level. So that was really eye-opening and something I don't think I would have otherwise been able to see.
Then what is it about bees that excites you the most and keeps you doing all the hard work that you're doing?
It's definitely the intricacy. I had no idea that they were as complicated and detailed and just absolutely as fascinating as they were. So beekeeping and honeybees themselves, there's just always more to learn, to the point where you could Google honeybees every other week and find new things popping up continually, because there's just so much research in the area and they're such a vital part of everyday life with pollination and whatnot, that they're really in the public eye right now, and that has pushed a lot of new research through. So when I say there's always new things to learn, that's not an exaggeration. And it's just amazing to be involved in something that's so dynamic, where there's always new things going on.
And then, so with the winter weather, it's been an odd winter for sure. How does that affect bees and that habitat that they have?
So for honeybees, during the winter, you have some very real, very pressing issues, especially in Iowa, and especially the long, cold winter. And obviously, there's the issue of foraging, where the winter lasts longer than usual. They don't have as long to build up their food stores and get ahead, per se. Bees, they're, if you think about a beehive, usually you have the two big boxes on the bottom and smaller boxes on top. Those two big boxes are for them. So if they get those filled up, it's good for them. But if they don't fill up any more than that, if they don't have the time, if they don't have the resources, then that's really going to kill the productivity for the beekeeper. Harvesting wise, they're not going to have anything they can take from them, which is really going to hurt their ability to financially stay involved in beekeeping and have the financial resources they need to be a good beekeeper. So that can really hurt if you have an overly long winter. Another big issue is pest control, pest management for diseases and parasites. If that's not managed properly in the summer, when you get to winter, that can really overrun your colony, because your honeybee population drops to its absolute minimum to survive in the winter. You think about it, fewer bees, they're going to consume less resources. And if that population drops, and the honeybee population drops, but the disease load doesn't, the parasite load doesn't, then this could keep on growing while the bee population is diminishing, and then it just overruns them with diseases or parasites, and sometimes both, unfortunately, to the point where the colony will collapse in on itself. And then a couple other problems that we have are moisture control. The bees, during the winter, they cluster against each other. They surround the queen, and they shiver their way through winter, essentially. And if they're shivering, they're generating heat, and that heat will go to the top of the box, you know, heat rises. And then the condensation that forms, if there's not a way to catch it and trap that condensation, that's going to drop back down on the bees and slowly freeze that cluster bees to death. Now, the last one, it's a little unsavory, but unfortunately really common. If we don't have a break in the weather where it's a warm day, the bees will literally die from holding it too long. They will not defecate inside the hive. So if they don't get a chance to go potty, they're going to die. So there's a lot of things that go into surviving a winter. And you get one or two or more of those things adding up and combining, it's really hard to survive winter to the point where we have anywhere from 20 to 40% colony loss over the winter being pretty common here in Iowa.
I'm sure if you ask anyone on the streets what bees do, they'd probably just say making honey. Can you shed some light on what else bees do?
Yeah. So I'm going to start with the most important thing, and that's going to, of course, be pollination. Now, bees don't pollinate plants out of the kindness of their hearts. They're out there collecting pollen to feed their brood, to feed their young. It's something that's just a driving instinct for them to go collect that pollen. But what's really incredible about that pollen collecting process is that byproduct of pollination. And the way this occurs is bees are flying through the air, right? And they fly pretty fast, anywhere from 16 to 20 miles per hour. And when they're flying, they generate a bit of an electric charge. You think about it, maybe you've walked out of the house with a dryer sheet attached to your clothes, same idea. Except for what's going to happen is when they fly into the flower, the pollen jumps onto their bodies because of that static charge. So instead of something trivial like a dryer sheet, it's this amazing, amazing reaction where this pollen is getting caught on their bodies. Now, they're very messy at this point. If you can just imagine a bee covered in this yellow, fine powder. It even covers their eyes because their eyes have very fine hairs on them. Now, they can't fly with their eyes covered in pollen, so they have very bristly legs that they'll brush over their body, but groom themselves, but they can't groom their whole body. There are spots that they physically can't reach, and those spots are the spots where the pollen's going to be transferred from flower to flower to flower. So it's this really amazing relationship between the pollen collecting process for the bees and the spread of pollen between flowers, where they're just really perfectly suited for each other in an amazing way. That pollination that they do, along with other pollinators, that makes about a third of the food we eat possible. So one out of every three bites of food, that's going straight back to pollinators. So you can see why when we've had issues with bee populations in the past few years, that's why you see this immediate movement to save the bees really springing out of nowhere to really try and address this problem as quickly and as thoroughly as possible.
And that transitions well into my next question. So what have the bee population trends been? How bad have they been?
There's been a lot of health scares in the industry. The most notable was around 2010, that was colony collapse disorder. A lot of people have probably heard of colony collapse disorder. CCD is thrown around a lot on a lot of different news sources. People talk about, oh, the bees are dying, they're going extinct. Honeybees aren't going extinct, but they're facing a plethora of health challenges that we've really never seen before in the beekeeping industry. In fact, beekeepers that have been in the industry for 30, 40 years, they refer to, I think, about the 1980s and further back, that was the golden age of beekeeping. Because as beekeeping has gone international, you have, again, pests, diseases, parasites from other countries or different regions that because of the national and international nature of the industry, bees in different areas haven't had to deal with these pests before, and now they do. So some of it is really out of our hands, and the best we can do is give money to our researchers and have them try and figure out these problems for us. And that's kind of where we're at. We're trying to find better medications, better treatment options and whatnot for our bees to try and ward off these diseases and parasites. But we're really in a big learning curve, especially with the huge influx of new beekeepers. Something I would definitely say to anyone interested in beekeeping, you need to take the class for yourself, for your bees, for the health of bees in the area, because if your bees die of an otherwise preventable disease or parasite, it doesn't just hurt your bees, because once those bees are dead, they're going to leave behind a hive full of resources, right? And the other bees in the area aren't going to ignore those resources. If there's honey in an unguarded hive, they're going to treat it like free lunch. They're going to go in there. They're going to wipe it out. But they're not just carrying honey out with them. They're carrying out diseases and parasites as well. So in some ways, the huge interest in beekeeping has done harm. I'm not going to say it's done more harm than good, But we've had a huge influx of not only the diseases and parasites, but people who don't know how to manage them. So that's a big issue we've been facing. And the way that we're trying to address that is more education, more funding for research, and just overall being more knowledgeable and aware of how we're raising our bees, our maintenance practices and whatnot.
And then just moving forward with you and your career, because you're obviously very passionate and knowledgeable about this, what kind of goals do you hope to accomplish moving forward?
Well, for myself personally, I would like to eventually have about 5 hives, but my main role I see myself in is as a honeybee advocate. I can't necessarily see myself as a commercial beekeeper, but definitely as an advocate, just educating and helping raise awareness for not just honeybees, but pollinators and even insects in general. We've had huge declines in insects over the past decades. If you think about it, I can remember when my grandma would drive back from Arizona when I was little, and her windshield would just be absolutely covered with spotted insects from the road trip. Kind of gross detail, but you think about it now, you're not stopping after every errand to wipe off your windshield to get those bugs off because they're just not there anymore. So we're having these huge issues with insect populations overall, which affect pollinators and affect bees, that are very serious, and people just don't know about the issues. And even if they do know about the issues, they're not sure what to do. So I see myself more in an advocacy position with educating and giving people doable resources, manageable resources to really take home and apply in a very realistic way.
And so if there's anybody out there listening to this and thinking how cool everything that it is that you've talked about and they want to get more educated or they want to get more involved, what kind of advice would you give them to kind of start getting involved in all this?
Yeah, so as far as beekeeping goes, we have a state beekeeping association. It's the Iowa Honey Producers Association. They can go to iowahoneyproducers.org and they can learn more about classes and clubs in the area. There are so many classes and clubs, and that's the best way to arm yourself with resources, whether you want to be a beekeeper or just a beekeeping advocate. Go to one of those classes, join one of those clubs. It's a really great supportive community. You can get hooked up with a mentor, someone who can come over and show you the hands-on of beekeeping if you're confused by the books you're reading or the classes you take. Beekeepers are really just some of the most supportive, generous people that I know. They're just willing to go that extra mile to make sure you understand, because we're also passionate about the industry. I would encourage people to check out my Facebook page. It's The Bee Lady. I'm very responsive to any questions people might have. If I don't know the answers, I'm happy to give them resources for someone else who does know the answers.
And that's been Carly Ray, The Bee Lady, speaking about bees. I'm Brandon Shanahan with KCII News.